speak out, as I've just described, they would probably not be back into Congress the next term.
Who are these forces that you're talking about?
Well, there's an inherent commitment in America, which I share as a Christian, of a deep commitment to make sure that Israel is safe and that Israel is free, and that they can seek for peace. So there's a strong inclination for all of us to support Israel's continued existence in peace. And that is added on to by the very effective work of the American-Israeli group called AIPAC, which is performing its completely legitimate task of convincing Americans to support the policies of the Israeli government. And AIPAC is not dedicated to peace. They're dedicated to inducing the maximum support in America, in the White House, in the Congress, and in the public media for whatever policies the Israeli government has at a particular time, and they're extremely effective.
Former President Jimmy Carter on Democracy Now! In 2007. Watch all our interviews with him at democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Cairo. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Are you ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. So go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, and contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. It's going on now until December 31st. And you can double your donation by donating today and having your contribution matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000. Wow.
Here we go again. It's the game we love.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Good morning and welcome to your community radio station and to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM. Today is Monday, the December 30th. It is 8:01 a.m. and I am Cecil Prescott. Thank you for joining us. As I said, this is KBOO Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. Via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Thank you for joining, and as you heard, if you were listening, we are in the midst of our year-end campaign, and the year ends in about a day. So you still have an opportunity to join us in this endeavor to support community radio. To help us keep the end of year campaign going strong, we have a special one-on-one match for up to $20,000 courtesy of a group of KBOO donors. Donate to KBOO right now during the Catalog of Connection year-end campaign. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $20,000. And thanks to this generous group of KBOO donors. Now is the perfect time for you to contribute as a year-end gift, as a Catalog Connection year-end campaign. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being a part of this community radio station as a means of staying connected and sharing information that we all need to know. As I mentioned, I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will share with you our phone numbers, 503-231-8187. This is our last program on More Talk Radio for this year, and what a year it has been. Lots of things have happened, and it's a time, this time of the year is a time of reflection. I'm curious about some of the things you think of are the most important things of 2024. Certainly we are aware of international and national events, but do you think some things have been overreported, and what are those things that have not been reported on or enough? What are those things that you wish we had, the media, had focused on? And what things are you saying, you know, that's too much already? As we reflect on the year and the transition from one year to the next, what are those things that have been overreported and those things that have been underreported? Now, those of you who are very, very aware, you do know that a little bit more than a week ago was the winter solstice. And if you are a very careful observer, you are notice that spring is coming. It is getting lighter earlier. In Portland, today the sun does not set until 4:36 p.m. I mean, there was a time a little more than a week ago was setting before 4:30. And now it's 4:36. Spring is here, so it's maybe a time to celebrate. But if spring is here and it's getting lighter earlier, I have a question. I'm just curious. How long do you leave up holiday lights? I notice the lights were bright and glistening in so many colors over the past few weeks, and it was almost like magic. The day by December 26th, I noticed in my neighborhood lights suddenly disappearing. People who had spent so much time carefully coordinating their lights suddenly said, okay, it's over. Time to take things down. So how long do you keep up lights? This is a curiosity. Do you keep it up until the beginning of the year? Some people do. Or do you take it down during the week between the last week of the year? Now, this year, I'm curious because of the calendars. This week is, you know, the week of Hanukkah, so the Festival of Lights. It's also the last week in December is also celebration of Kwanzaa, and another cultural celebration that focus on candles and lights. So maybe, you know, we are aware of the need for lights at this time of year when it gets dark so early and stays dark so long. But some people are taking down holiday lights, and why? So how long do you keep up your light? Do you keep them up until the end of the calendar year or longer, or winter long? I'm curious. And as you are aware of now, former President Jimmy Carter has died. He died yesterday at the age of 100. Quite a legacy that people will continue to research and read and write about. Not only a legacy of his political career, but also his post-presidential years. He was elected president at the age of 52 or 53. He served one term. So by the age of 56, his presidential career had ended. And like all of us, when we leave a job, when we are fired, perhaps he was fired by the American people, people said, what's next? And his post-presidential career is as significant, if not more so, than his presidential career, which was only 4 years, but also his, I think it was most significant than his whole political career, including when the time when he served as governor of Georgia. So for 46 years afterwards, Jimmy Carter had to explore what is life all about. And while many presidents cash in, ex-president cash in, joining, you know, corporate boards of directors, getting paid very high sums for private speeches. Jimmy Carter was another character. He refused to join corporate boards. He refused to speak at corporate events for special lots of money. Rather, he continued, I think, on an effort in terms of his perspective of making the world a better place. So we are familiar with his post-presidential career, not working to his work with Habitat for Humanity and actually building homes. And also, if you heard the little segment on Democracy Now this morning, he was also someone who was continued to be interested and to advocate for peace around the world. Received the Nobel Peace Prize a number of years ago. And he continued with his center to go around the world to be a peacemaker. He also somehow found the time to write 32 books. Just think of that, 32 books over a range of topics, you know, a couple of biographies, which is something that every ex-president does. You know, you write your memoirs. But Jimmy Carter did not stop with his first memoir. He continued to write. He continued to write on a number of topics, on world affairs, he wrote books of poetry, reflections on life, his life, and our lives together. So he was a different character, and different than other presidents, and as has been observed by some folks, social media, Jimmy Carter perhaps has given one last gift, should we say, to the incoming president. It was reported that Jimmy Carter, who, you know, was on hospice for many months, was reported that he wanted to live long enough to vote for Kamala Harris, and he did. Donald Trump won the election. Jimmy Carter died yesterday, December 29th, and left one last gift to the president, to the incoming president. The current president, Joe Biden, issued a proclamation following Jimmy Carter's death that called for U.S. flags to be displayed at half-staff at the White House, on public buildings and grounds, at military bases, as well as naval stations and vessels, for a period of 30 days from the day of his death. Now, this is in line with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, which states that flags should be displayed for such a period after a former president's death at all federal buildings, grounds, and naval vessels throughout the country and its territories. The flags are set to be flown at half staff until sunset January 28th, more than a week after Trump's inauguration on January 20th. So when Donald Trump is inaugurated, the flag will be at half staff. What a tribute that Jimmy Carter gives to Donald Trump. And some people on social media have noted it and observed it. One last laugh, his final message, a lot. But for those of you who are old enough, what are your thoughts on, well, all of us are old enough, but those of you who are old enough who remember Jimmy Carter's presidency, what was it about his presidency that you remember, that you take? And for all of us, his post-presidency, what do we learn from that? What does it mean for us? A friend of mine, a community organizer from the South, who's done a lot in many communities, Suzanne Farr, a rural Southern organizer. She wrote, Jimmy Carter, the great humanitarian, leaves us with the understanding that rural values, the love of the earth, the love of community, and the willingness to help one another, are what we must continue to work for today when values have shifted and those holding the greater power divides us through individual competition and a lust for power, for wealth. She continues, I often muse on what the world would have been like if God Carter had been able to bring the hostages home and then was elected again. No Reagan thrust towards individualism, no ruthless attack against unions and workers, no carefully contrived racialization of every social issue, no moving our industries abroad, no support of Christian nationalist movements that is the opposite of Carter's Christianity that believes everyone has a right to the tree of life. And she concludes, thank you, Jimmy Carter, for your 100 years of working for the good of the common people everywhere. Now, certainly, Mr. Carter would say, be the first to say he was no saint. And certainly, we can talk and debate policies. But I think it's interesting that these many years after his presidency, we'll have a contrast between the character of Jimmy Carter and the character of Donald Trump. Thank you, Mr. Carter, for your service. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call to be a part of our community discussion. Do you have some thoughts or reflection on Jimmy Carter? And or do you have some thoughts about news generally this past year? What things were reported you heard too much of? What things were underreported? Those, I'm curious in terms of people reflections on things that they are thinking about. And as the year draws to a new year, are your lights still up? Let's go to our callers. Lenita is our first caller. Good morning, Lenita. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Cecil, and Happy Kwanzaa. Today's the fifth day of Kwanzaa. I want to thank you and all the KBOO crew for all the hard work you guys did this last year, and it's going to really be needed in 2025 for the next 4 years. There's nothing I can say that could top last letter that you read, and thank you for the sharing that. That was really beautiful. I just wanted to point out that, you know, 100 years is 100 years, no shame in his game, but for him to pass while President Biden is still in office, to have the flags at half staff during the inauguration of dump, and I just think that's very symbolic, because it's like our democracy is at half-mast.
Yes.
But I really want to thank you, and that was a beautiful letter you read, and I think a lot of the things that we're going through now is the result of Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
You know, and Reaganism, and
if so.
Jimmy Carter was a good man. He might have been too good for us. And he got manipulated by the whole Ronald Reagan machine. But he was a good, to build houses for low-income people so they can have something of value to create generational wealth, that was truly revolutionary.
Yes.
And I love the editorial cartoons where Rosalind is in heaven and she sees him and she runs toward him. That was a beautiful. My eyes, you know, sort of teared up when I saw that. But he was the first president I ever voted for, and a lot of things have changed. But I want to thank you for reading that, and I want to wish you and your listeners a Happy New Year. Thank you so much, Cecil, for all your hard work.
Well, thank you, Lenita, and thank you for mentioning that today is, you know, the fifth day of Kwanzaa.
Perfect.
And it's that's right. Nia.
Nia, yeah. Nia. I named my daughter after the fifth day. So today, you know, she's just all into her purpose. So
all
that's
right.
Very groovy, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Lenita, and best wishes to you in the coming year. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and before we go to our next caller, mention that today is the fifth day of Kwanzaa. The day is Nia, or purpose. And today's principle is to recognize and embrace the collective goals of a community and to understand how each person's role in the community contributes to the collective process. And here we are, a collective, hearing from you. Let's go to our next caller. Santiago, good morning.
Best good wishes. Morning.
How are you today?
Happy fifth day of Kwanzaa. I'm doing well.
Hey, thank you. Great.
Hey, no problem. So I'm going to combine a couple of the ones that you put out here. So I'm going to combine things that were not talked about, and I'm going to talk about Jimmy Carter. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things that we're that, and it's kind of more of a general thing, you know, like we don't do enough to talk about, you know, what the harms are of our even the most what we might even consider benign of the political class. You know, we don't talk about those harms, and you know, like it, maybe even benign isn't the word, but like, mm-hmm. you know, in the run up to the election, you know, we're talking about people were trying to throw a wet blanket. People were talking about how, like, you know, leftists were throwing a wet blanket on Kamala's candidacy,
yes.
by bringing up the harms that her tenure as the AG of California, the harms that it did to poor folks and black and brown folks under her watch. And I feel like people were trying to do that because they were so afraid of Trump that, like, they didn't want to discuss that because they felt like it would really harm the chances rather than trusting the public to be able to make informed decisions based on, like, real information as it comes to candidates. Well, you know, Jimmy Carter in his post-presidential years may have done some good stuff, but, you know, in his short tenure as president, he supported some pretty awful stuff. You know, he supported the South African backlash against the people's movement for liberation in Angola. You know, because the South African folks would not accept the MLPA's victory over the South African apartheid, and the U.S. along with European powers were very much a part of that resistance in terms of funding. You know, they were very slow to recognize. I mean, you even see, like, post the victory that the movement for people's liberation in Angola, they were immediately asking Mandela if he would side with the U.S. against Castro, and he was like, man, Castro actually sent his people. He not only sent resources, but he sent men to help me fight. He's like, where was the U.S. when we needed help?
Yeah, I would ask you to pause for a second to help. I just want to clarify and to make sure that our listeners are on the same board. You know, just a little reflection on where the nation in the world was in the 1970s as including, you made reference to revolutionary movements and countries and certainly in Africa, and also the active role that the United States and its allies played in dismantling and interrupting people's liberation movements, and as you observe in the observation of Castro's, of Cuba's support of liberation struggles. Certainly different times, but I appreciate you raising these up. And in the in all the discussions about President Carter, I think it's important to recall these things as well. So thank you. Continue, Santiago.
Yeah, and no, I appreciate that. I appreciate the context, you know, and the fact of the matter is that, like, you know, he also, post the Vietnam era, you know, he set the stage for because the military funding had gone down post Vietnam War, but when Jimmy Carter got into office, he put a halt to that and started giving money to the war machine, and then that set the stage for the type of funding that Reagan was going to do in his 8-year tenure,
right.
And then he also said that he refused to help Vietnam recover because he expressed that the damage caused was mutual. Like, when you look at, now, I mean, I could see how people could pretend that at the time, but especially now as we've uncovered more.
Wait. put some context on what you just said. I'm not sure I understand. He refused to do what?
Okay, so what I'm saying is that he said that he had no, that he, post Vietnam War, Jimmy Carter during his presidency specifically stated that the U.S. had no obligation to help Vietnam after the war because destruction was mutual. When we know, like, they dropped more bombs, we dropped more bombs on Vietnam, you know, per square inch than all of the bombs dropped during World War II.
Okay, I would appreciate if you were able to either identify where he said this and put that in some context. Maybe not right now, but that would be helpful for me. So, continue.
I don't have the sources right here on hand, and I apologize for
No need to apologize. It's just information that I wasn't aware of. Any thoughts on, you know, and I assume this happened during his presidency. Any thoughts? Because, you know, he was only president 4 years, you know, half a century ago. So, you know, half his life was after his presidency. Any reflection on his legacy, his post-presidential legacy?
Well, I mean, his post-presidential legacy is pretty good. I'm not going to deny that. But the fact of the matter is it kind of comes back to what I was talking about with Kamala Harris. Like, we don't put the goodness of what people do in context. Like, right now, Barack Obama think about like a George W. Bush Jr. His image is being you know, relitigated in the public sphere now that he's palling around with like Ellen DeGeneres and Michelle Obama. We have such a short institutional memory,
right? I think that's a very important point where you raise up how George Bush is being rehabilitated in the common mind. It's also, you know, related to what you were saying about the last presidential campaign, and I'm reminded of the palling around of conservative Republicans with the Democratic nominees. And so, you know, when did all of a sudden Cheney Republicans become like the good guys? And so that critique was absent. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's what that's basically what I'm getting at with Jimmy Carter. Mm-hmm. Is like, I'm not saying that his post presidential stuff was bad by any stretch of the imagination, but 4 years as the top dog in terms of, like, you know, at the time, you know, Martin Luther King was saying that the U.S. is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. So having 4 years to sit in that seat, you know, it as half a century ago, but I mean, you could argue that Ronald Reagan only had 8 years in office half a century ago, and we're still living with what he did.
Yeah, but you know, I would say, because Jimmy Carter, I said, was only 4 years, but it was after 8 years of Republicans. It was after Johnson left office. Nixon and Ford was there for 8 years. You had Jimmy Carter, who was sort of like, I think you're quite accurate, at that time when he was running, he was running not as a progressive Democrat, you know, I'm trying to think of whatever the term was used, you know, 50 years ago, but as a, you know, conservative, moderate Democrat. He had, you know, 4 little years as president, but he may have been able to alter the Democratic trajectory to a more conservative wing way. So you had during his campaign or supporters, people such as who would one day become the governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton. So you have the whole new wave of I forgot what they call them, blue collar Democrats or blue dog Democrats rise to power. And so that might have been the harbinger of of a more conservative nationwide trend that, you know, culminated with Reagan and where we are today.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, you're talking post-Vietnam, where you had like one of the largest increases in class consciousness since the you know, like post-First World War, you know, going into the Second World War. You know, so I mean, it's like, you know, they were doing everything they could to claw back power to the establishment. And, you know, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, a lot of those Democrats are a part. I mean, I would even consider Barack Obama and Kamala Harris,
you know,
because they're trying to relitigate history and consolidate power. And you know, and it's like, and kind of like creating secular saints out of politicians, you know. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying that what he did post-presidency was necessarily bad. So we don't look at the whole history, you know. I'll leave you with this, you know, Michael Parenti, my favorite quote of his is, he's like, you know, inside of every U.S. president is an emperor waiting to get out, and it's our job as the people to shove him back down in his gazoo.
Yeah.
And I just don't think we, you know, because of our lack of class consciousness, I just don't think we really see that. And I just want to bring that to the front.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for this conversation and for raising those important points.
Hey, no problem, man. Thank you so much for the conversation.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers are 503-231-8187. Our last caller, Santiago, was sharing some of his reflection on the legacy of Jimmy Carter and a critique of his presidency. He raised some very important points in terms of how the presidency of Jimmy Carter sits within the context of U.S. or world history, and how Mr. Carter, as all U.S. presidents, are part of that machine. One thing I think is important to note that I did not have a chance in our conversation to raise with our last caller, maybe you might have some thoughts on that, is that even though Mr. Carter was a part of that machine, war machine, he was a naval officer and went to Naval Academy and military. Even though he was very much part of the U.S. war machine, if you prefer those terms, he remained pretty much an outsider in terms of presidential politicians and in terms of politicians generally. Remember his campaign in 1976, was it? He ran as an outsider. He was not part of the Democratic establishment. They did not even know who he was. He wasn't a Washington insider. And part of the problem that people have suggested that he had was that he did not know how to play the Washington insider's game. And he refused to do that. And because he did that, he was shoved aside. And even in post-presidentials, maybe it's part of his personality, but also, you ever see pictures of the former president? Oftentimes, Jimmy Carter is on the side. It was sort of like he remained an outsider. He was not someone who was part of the old boys club, and that I commend him for. Let's go to our next caller, Lou. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and Happy New Year to you.
Sure, you too. So your last caller was really good and interesting. As an elder, demographically, I was a VISTA volunteer with Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Macon, Georgia, and this was basically during Carter's era. And what I remember about Jimmy Carter in the presidential context.
Okay.
I mean, I agree with you and most people who think he was one of the best, or perhaps the best, ex-presidents in terms of public service, housing, democracy, et cetera, peace. But in the presidency, that was the first time I didn't vote for a Democrat in 1980. I voted for Carter and Mondale in 76. But as I remember, and you can correct me, of course, I believe that Carter supported Somoza against the rebels in Nicaragua. Mm. But also the hostage crisis in terms of forgotten history was generated because Carter accepted the Shah coming to the United States.
Yes, yeah.
And that's why the revolutionary movement in Iran, in Tehran, basically took the embassy hostage.
Yes, yes.
So I think it's important to say Carter is a really good person, post-presidential.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a pretty valid critique by your last caller of Carter as president.
Yes.
So what else should I say? I should mention that currently, you're asking about underreported stories, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we are at Portland State, our group, Portland Grey Panthers. We're pushing local media, and we're having more progress with the Portland Tribune versus the Oregonian, which people in Portland may not be surprised at. The Tribune's printed like more than a dozen articles that we've sent in. We just sent one in to the Oregonian on gun reform, which is sort of an underreported story, I would say. You know, there's a boycott against Walmart, and we've started hearing from people in other states, Virginia yesterday and Missouri a couple days ago, interested in working on Grey Panther stuff, including that boycott against Walmart for gun reform. But our Keith Wilson is the new mayor. He takes office in a few days. He endorsed that boycott. We've known Keith. This is like a weird thing I mentioned before, probably.
Yeah.
We kind of know people that were elected and then ran for office, and we've never known a mayor of any city that has volunteered with us, perhaps like Jimmy Carter, for 3 years and then gets elected. It doesn't mean we have lots of influence over Keith. It's just he's donated money, and we like him and hope he will do well, as opposed to Renee Gonzalez, kind of the Trump clone. So do you have, you haven't said yourself, and normally you don't like saying, do you think there was a main underreported story this past year, either locally or nationally?
I need to think about that.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah, but no, I don't have any. So that's why I was
just
asking people, because, you know, underreported is stories we don't hear about. So I appreciate what you shared this morning with us, Lou.
Well, I'd say the 30-second conclusion would be that there's a black woman in Portland who talked with us at the Portland building, Asia Savage, S-A-V-A-G-E, and she talks about gun reform, and we're going to invite her to come to the next thing we do in February. But both her mom and her brother were killed by gun violence in Portland. So she talks out of personal experience. And she's 27, so she's like under 30, like a younger activist. Yeah. So anyway, thanks for the program.
Thank you so much,
all right, bye.
Joe. And thank you for your work, and thank you for continuing to advocate for gun reform. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil, and we will now speak with Tangent. Good morning.
Hey, Cecil. How are you?
I'm well. And Happy New Year to you.
Excellent. I'm well as well. Just on Carter, I wanted to bring up a couple of things. That he installed solar panels on the White House roof.
Yes.
And Ronald Reagan, that was the first thing he did, along with gutting the tax incentives that had turned solar power in California alone into a $1 billion-a-year business. So much for private enterprise, Mr. Reagan. So anyway, imagine where that would have brought us for global warming. I mean, he was also an advocate for nuclear energy, and you know, everybody can be mistaken or misguided or whoever. You know, he was a nuclear physicist, I think, right?
Yeah. Yes.
But anyway,
thank you.
I think he was a very a shining light. Now, I'm sure it's very difficult to do everything you want to do. There's a lot of, forces around him that could make it difficult or even scary.
Right.
But anyway, hats off, Mr. Carter.
Hey.
Appreciate you.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO. And thank you for that last comment. And one thing that occurred to me, I forgot what it was, but it was I appreciated how, I appreciate your observation in terms of Mr. Carter putting up solar panels in the White House and Ronald Reagan taking them down. And also, I'm curious about how people feel about, you know, his future, not his future, but his post-presidential life. Let's go to our next caller, Jeff. Jeff, thank you for waiting. How are you today?
It's a pleasure to wait for you, sir, and I am well. I hope you are, too, and thank you, Cecil, for your program, and thanks to KBOO, most especially for this year's work done by Althea Billings, which includes what she called Running on Air. It actually educated us beyond what was otherwise available on the air or in print.
Very, very good. And I appreciated that. It was so, I mean, that's all about that, what I think good radio is all about. And that education went well. And thank you, Althea, for doing that for us.
And that being said, I'd like to bring forward the idea of light. Mm-hmm. After all, solar panels on the roof of the White House involve light.
Yes.
And light itself, as a pastor, you know that in the beginning there was the light and the darkness has never put it out. That being said, nevertheless, light. In the history of human existence on planet Earth, it is our ability to create light in the darkness that separates us from possibly every other organism, except, of course, the anglerfish that has the illuminated little thing at the end of their face that attracts the prey and so forth. But the ability to create light, especially at nighttime, has transformed our species into something altogether different.
I just want to pause because that observation is, wow. Okay, continue.
In fact, there is great error, not unlike the error of the mirror, which has been distributed widely amongst all humans on Earth. The mirror has been a dangerous invention when given to all humans, because it actually contributes to the narcissism of our species, whereas light, illuminating the darkness, has created for us an opportunity to run about all night long. And what do we see at night? Well, we see all kinds of criminal activities because we have the power to illuminate.
Okay.
Indeed we had the power to illuminate, we would illuminate our sins, our errors, and find a better way forward. Instead, we simply light the darkness with say, marquees that advertise the latest piece of cinema. Nightclubs and the like. Okay. And light has its positive nature, but light has proven dangerous as well.
Thank you. Light. That's a great observations on light and what that means for us, and your observation that, you know, we created light of all the organisms except one, and how it transform our world, but also the ability to bring light where there is darkness also means great responsibility for either good or for ill. Hey, and as we approach the end of the year, and as we mentioned earlier that we are just past winter solstice, and as our last caller, Jeff, observed, we have the ability to create light. What light, what things do we need to bring to light in this coming year? What problems or concerns should we focus on? Lots of them that we are aware of, and things that we need to do. But I think the model of Jimmy Carter, and certainly we can critique his presidency and the U.S. military, and U.S. economy, U.S. political system. One thing that I think is important that I'm coming back to is Mr. Carter's post-presidential career and what that may mean for all of us as we move on to the third act or final act. Where do we want to go and what do we want to do? Again, Mr. Carter, 44 years after his presidency, he did many, many things. And that's what I find, one thing I find inspiring, the ability to say, I'm going to make a difference. And the fact that he wrote, a credible amount of energy, plus writing 32 books. Who knows? Let's go to our next caller. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I'm going to be translating a couple of articles about limiterism, the idea that no one needs more than $10 or $11 million.
Oh, no, 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 no. Mr. Musk would disagree with that. No, no, that's just... No, but go ahead.
I wanted to share this kind of startling statement from an Austrian journalist.
Mm.
He says that that the Russian ballistic missile, Oreshnik, changes everything. Now they fired this this missile, which is 10 times the speed of sound, on November 21st at a weapons facility in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. This was after Biden shot a missile on November 17th, 200 miles into Russia. So this is very underreported, of course, and the missile has the power of a meteorite, and it cannot be detected. And after they shot this missile, there were no more ballistic missiles shot by any Western nuclear power, the United States, France, or Britain. So maybe reality will change our chauvinistic thinking. This is my hope, and
well,
I'm very grieved by the fact that celebrity news dumbifies. Henry Giroux was on the David Pakman show, and he talked about how the culture of truth has been eclipsed by the culture of ignorance, and he asked what institutions encourage the culture of ignorance. And this is a very important question.
So, to save
our democracy.
Okay, I want you to give the answer. What institutions?
Money has to be out of politics. The billionaires are in contradiction to democracy, and people are distrustful of all our institutions.
So, are there any institutions?
So it's the Congress. The educational system, certainly the educational system, journalism.
Certainly none of these are held in high esteem, these institutions.
That's right, because they're corrupted by billionaires, And so...
So how do we get beyond that?
Ignorance falls to... ignorance becomes superior to truth.
So
that's Henry Thoreau.
So how do we lift up truth? Or is there a way? Or will ignorance... Is ignorance victorious?
No. The light shines in the darkness.
Oh.
And the darkness will not overcome it. And when we actually overcame Paul Ryan, who tried to do away with food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to block Trump at every point. We're going to block authoritarianism, and we're going to succeed. It's going to be a long process.
Yes.
That's my perspective, and I hope for a Marshall Plan for journalism that's run by progressives.
Well.
I think that would be very... very important, you know, in winning back the spirits of the people.
Well, so how do you do that? Say more.
There is one indie media website, and that's indiebay.org.
Well, you mentioned that.
Yeah. Well.
So in terms of, you know, when
people can comment,
walking around looking at TikTok videos on their phones, there's no allegiance to any, you know, institutions or you know. So how do we get beyond? How do we change?
How do we become anti-militarist?
Okay.
Maybe we become more realist. We open ourselves to critical information. We start listening and respecting Austrian, Swiss, German writers.
Okay.
That would be important.
I think so. Hey, we have another caller that I'd like to get in before we go.
But
I appreciate what you said and your inspiration this morning. Take care. And our final caller this morning is Janet. Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I have some different things people talking about, light and radiation. I think the clearer mirror guidance about that your heart is actually a mirror, not outside of you, but you clear the tarnish off it, then you can reflect love, and then the universe will shine and radiate from inside of you, inner happiness. So I want to share a little quote. Ralph Waldo Emerson?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to share a little quote again. Here we go.
Okay. Stay still. Okay.
And so a cheerfulness seeks a good temper. The more of it is spent, the more of it remains. Cheerfulness is not the same as frivolousness. Cheerfulness is born of a fighting spirit. Frivolousness is the reverse and a cowardly escape. Emerson said that you're dwelling in cheerfulness. When you dwell in cheerfulness, then hope pours forth from your working mood. Without cheerfulness, there is no strength. Strive, advance still more brightly and cheerfully. Get that?
Yes, yeah. I'm just thinking. Hey, thank you. And that was Emerson, Ralph Waldo?
That was Ralph Waldo Emerson. Cheerful, okay. To be cheerful. And optimistic.
Yes.
And hopeful. It resonates with the universe in a much brighter, forward-reaching, proactive way, like that one guy, Pronoia, the antidote to paranoia. Let's go forward.
All right. Hey, thank you so much, Janet. I appreciate that, and that call to embrace cheerfulness, not frivolousness, cheerfulness. Thank you so much. And thank you all for doing so much and being such an important part of this community radio station. And I hope all of you continue to support community radio station, our catalog of Connection Year End campaign. Go to KBOO.FM/give or click on the red box donate in the mobile app. Text KBOO to 44321 or mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Our catalog of Connection Year End campaign depends on you. So join us as we reach our goal. And this week we have the opportunity of a matching grant. So donate today and be a part. It's a perfect way to end the year. And stay tuned for more programming here on your community radio station. Best wishes for a good new year. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will speak with you next time.
Sequoia Ezekiwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.